Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to episode 24 of The Hi-Lo, the weekly news and pop culture podcast brought to you by journalists Pandora Sykes and Dolly Wolverton,
who sounds a little bit like Rod Stewart today. Be careful what you wish for, because last week I wished for a hacking cough and I was granted it.
Why did you wish for that?
Because last week I was saying that it was sad that I felt so ill, but it was so up in the glands because it meant I didn't have any symptoms that would give me any sympathy. But now I do.
Now you've got the hacking cough.
So anyway, sorry about that. What have you been up to this week, Pandy?
I've been enjoying lots of things, actually. I mean, this is the joy of being home all the time now, is I'm discovering quite a lot. So I started watching, which came out last year, but I never watched it then because it was on Amazon Prime and I didn't have Amazon Prime. So I've actually just bought it for like £19 from Google Play. The Girlfriend Experience.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a series by, how do I pronounce that director's name? Is it Steven Soderbergh? Soderbergh?
Oh, dear.
What do you think, DJ CJ?
Soderbergh.
Okay, so Steven Soderbergh, and it stars...
I love that Charlie's like, you know, Carol Vorderman, when they check what the... when they look up...
He looks quite like Carol Vorderman, actually, as well.
Anyway, The Girlfriend Experience.
So The Girlfriend Experience stars Riley Keough, who is Elvis Presley's great-granddaughter,
I think. She's so beautiful.
She's so beautiful. And it's about a law student who becomes an escort. You've watched some of it as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I power-watched an episode this morning on your recommendation.
What do you think?
I mean, it's so beautifully shot. I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting something more sitcomy, I think. I think the title makes it sound
quite more hip-lit.
Irreverent than it is. It's actually kind of slick. The tone is quite dark. I really like it. I think it's really glamorous. It's really sexy. I'm definitely going to carry on watching it.
It gets so much darker.
It's very sexually charged.
The only thing, oh my God, there's so... Yeah, I mean, you see her having sex with every single one of her, most of the time quite old and fat clients. Mm. The only thing that I thought was slightly predictable is that, and I feel like you often see this in those roles, because it's only assumed that these women could be an escort and be okay with it, is that she has no friends. Mm. And she is completely emotionless. At one point she asks someone if she's a sociopath. Mm. And that's, I think...
It's kind of lazy characterisation.
Well, it's just not particularly groundbreaking to see women like that occupying sort of an unemotional space, because she has no discernible emotions of her own. Mm. But maybe that's why it works. If Although it was me or you in the title role, everyone would be like, oh, for God's sake, stop pontificating and just get down to it. Way too much to-ing and fro-ing.
Just ring the client. Yeah, I really liked, and I was not expecting it, because I think I was expecting more of a sort of Zooey Deschanel New Girl thing.
Yeah, I know, you definitely
know why. I was really surprised, and I watched it like 8 a.m. this morning. The bit that I found that really got me into it was, this is going to make me sound like a pervert, that's because I am, is the sex scene in which she goes over to that guy in the club and says, I want to fuck you, and then takes him home.
Yes, I know, and she's so buttoned up, like, as in sartorially.
I really enjoy watching female sexuality like that, because it wasn't cartoonised in that kind of Samantha Jones way. It was just someone who had specific desires and kinks and the confidence to ask for them, and we don't really see women having sex on their terms like that often on screen. And it was all about sort of her pleasure. So I was really hooked from the moment I watched that scene.
I think I'm on about episode 7 now, and I think there's 12 or 13. And I'm hoping to see some kind of emotional arc with her. I'm hoping to see like any kind of moment where we see her thinking about the situation she's in, or
because otherwise that is slightly misogynistic characterization, isn't it? That this person can't be emotionally complex, that she can only be perhaps a victim of patriarchy. I don't know.
She absolutely loved making that series. I remember reading a lot, and she felt like it was from a very feminist space, and they spoke to so many escorts when she was making it. She said she found it really interesting and it made her look at things really differently. She's a really good actress, but I just haven't necessarily seen that totally reflected yet. So that's The Girlfriend Experience. Check it out if you're looking for a new series, but not if you're looking for a new girl. And now I've started reading The Power by Naomi Alderman, which won the Bailey's Prize for Fiction. Dolly, can you read that, please, so that we can talk about it? Not necessarily on this show, but, you know.
I will do.
Just so that I have something to talk to you about. Jesus. More things I've been enjoying this week. There is a big memer on Instagram called Tank Sinatra. Do you follow him?
No.
You'd like him. Do you follow, like, Fuck Jerry and Fat Jewish?
Yeah, I love those. Yeah, beige cardigan.
Tank Sinatra is one of them. Anyway, he started an account called Tank's Good News.
I do follow him.
Do I keep adding you and stuff?
You tagged me, and it's such a joyful thing to be
did
greeted
with.
Did I tag
you in a picture of all the paws?
No, you tagged me in, I think it might have been the news story about the black American man who was luring people away from the KKK by befriending them.
Oh my gosh, I don't even remember reading that. They're so...
It's like uplifting.
It's an amazing... Yeah, his theory was, I just want to... Everyone needs some good vibes. As you're only going to find good vibes on this account. And it has garnered such a following.
It's so lovely.
You just can't fall that. Yeah, he tweets pictures of... there was one of a fireman rescuing two children during the hurricane. There was a picture, I think, that I just tagged my husband in of just loads and loads of sets of fluffy paws, you know, to help sort of ease you into your day.
Oh, you said that's in your saved, and I did the same. I put it in my little flag
I put it in
folder.
My saved to look at it. And then there was another one, I think, of this sort of toddler and a baby lying on a rug together, and the toddler didn't have any arms, and he was still feeding his little brother, and it said, who needs arms to take care of? I mean, it's just so lovely. Honestly, if you really, really want to get something positive out of your Instagram, which you don't always, follow Tank's Good News.
And it does make a real difference, I think, when you go onto your feed just to
see something lovely.
Reminded of the good in humanity, or just something funny or something sweet. It's lovely.
Absolutely. I agree with that. I read an amazing column by Mariela Frostrup. She has a column on the back page of The Observer magazine, for anyone that doesn't know, and she is absolutely one of my favourite writers. I'm not one for reading advice columns, but I am completely addicted to her advice column. At the time of recording this, she had 1,800 comments and over 7,500 shares, which is huge for a piece of advice. And I just wanted to read a tiny bit of it, which I loved. So this was the dilemma. I have huge anger at my brother's wife for her actions, which I feel are directly responsible for my nephew being handicapped. I won't go into all the details. The home birth went terribly wrong. My nephew has been permanently damaged. It's a tragedy of almost Shakespearean proportions. It's caused major rifts. My heart is breaking, and I feel my nephew is exposed to severe parental negligence, and I can't get past my anger over it. And Mariela replies, those are very serious accusations. You appear unusually animated about what is an extremely personal matter, probably none of your business, and a miscalculation rather than a crime. Pontificating about the affairs of others is nothing new to yours truly, but at a certain juncture, one does have to recognise that people have a right to make their own mistakes. And it just goes on, and it's so... What I love about her as well and her advice is she never hedges her bets. She never goes, I think, or in my opinion. She absolutely... shoots from the hip. And I thought, reading, when I first read that, I was like, what can she say, because she is so strong, I thought, what can she say back to that that's going to be, you know, in her sort of normal way? I was really intrigued to see what she could reply, and I love that she focused on our sort of obsession with analysing how other people live their lives. And she said, we spend a lot of time vicariously living other people's lives these days, whether it's the Kardashians or celebrities in the jungle, giving us an unrealistic sense of our connection to strangers.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is so interesting and true.
And also feeds into, you know, a larger conversation that is happening at the moment, and thank God it's happening at the moment, about controlling the birth stories of women.
Yeah, controlling the narrative around birth.
Natasha Perlman, who's the editor of Grazia, wrote a piece that had everyone talking on my social media feeds this weekend for the Saturday Times about her unbelievably traumatic birthing experience. And she doesn't do it to scaremonger, but what she the reason she tells it is she said that she had this adamant obsession with natural birth because of the conversations around natural birth. And I just think it's so good that women are talking about this stuff now. I think it's so good.
There's certainly a lot about it now. On a lighter note, have you seen what the Victoria's Secret angels have been wearing to the Victoria's Secret auditions?
No.
So they've been happening this week. Please Google it. It's like they're off to a sex party. They're going to auditions. But because it's Victoria's Secret, they've all had these massive blow dries. And they're dressed in crop tops and see-through tops and cut-off, like, body shorts and fringed leather jackets and little boots. And it's just the most hilarious thing you've ever seen, because it's the middle of the day and they're walking in and out of this completely...
What are they auditioning for?
To see who will be in the show this year.
Oh, I thought they only used the qualified angels.
No, you have to do audition every year. So your Stella Maxwell's and who else?
I thought you meant like a bloody open call, like a
No, it's not an open call. No. This is what's so funny is it's like all of the really, really top models auditioning, quote unquote. It's just a sort of PR stunt, but it's like the ridiculous. Middle of the day in New York in this like really kind of greyish building, and they're wearing these mentally sort of strumpety outfits.
Strumpety
outfits going to the audition. So if you want another light pick-me-up, Google Victoria's Secret auditions. If you'd like another light pick-me-up, may I direct you to the story regarding Dennis Rodman and his new friendship with Kim Jong-un?
What?
He's been talking about his new friendship with him. And in response to the
question...
Where
has he been talking about it?
He was talking about it on Good Morning Britain on Wednesday.
I've got to start watching morning television.
You have to start watching it.
I've got to start watching morning TV.
I've got so many great things. So he's asked, you know, how did you become friends with the leader of North Korea? And how do you hope that you can influence his, like, fucking mad dictatorship?
He loves basketball. And I think that's the key for anything in the world, basketball and music. I think that's a great connection for anyone in the world, but so happened, it has to be me.
Dolly, Google it to watch the whole interview. It's
the thing
totally
is, it does
mental.
Make total sense to go from basketball to Celebrity Big Brother to friendship with a dictator, I think.
What does Kim Jong-un get out of it?
I don't know.
I don't think Dennis Robbins got many cool points anymore.
He's not.
Once married to Carmen Electra. And then my last, also on Great Morning Britain, thing that really entertained me this week is Jacob Rees-Mogg, who seems to be getting a hell of a lot of airtime in silly season, as he calls it. Although silly season is now over in September, so we must stop. But Jacob Rees-Mogg, who, for those of you who don't know, he's the Tory MP, famously with six children, who's never changed a nappy. And lots of people think that he might become the next Tory leader, but he says that's complete crap. He's a backbencher. But anyway, he is the poshest man I've ever heard. And on Good Morning Britain, he says there's this bit where he just goes, you know, and some chap in Rotherham got Mog tattooed on his chest, which is very generous of him. DJ CJ has just interjected in the way only DJ CJ can, with some random piece of historical factual knowledge, that Jacob Rees-Mogg was actually interviewed by Ali G in the early noughties about being posh. Do you think we can find that clip?
What do you think makes a girl upper class?
Well, exactly the same thing that makes a man upper class.
But is it things like she spits into a hanky?
I don't think spitting into one's handkerchief is widely regarded as a symbol of membership of the upper class.
What if someone is so rich they have a swimming pool? Would they be the upper class?
No, I think this is a bizarre definition of class.
I was out recently and people started talking about what your Jacob Rees-Mogg name is. So apparently it's your name plus the surname of your history and English teacher hyphenated and the last home county you visited. So mine would be Dolly Wheaton Cox, Oxfordshire.
It'd be better if it was Wheaton Cock.
Wheaton Cock.
So if you want to do your Jacob Rees-Mogg
please
name,
tweet them in.
Dolly will be tweeting instructions on how to follow this very sophisticated game. Dolly, what about you? What have you been consuming this week?
Oh, I haven't been consuming that much because I birthdayed myself, and then I was a bridesmaid over the weekend at my friends Lou and Nick's wedding, and they are now off in Hawaii, and I can only hope, listening to the podcast on their sun lounger. So hello if you're listening, and if you don't get in touch to say thank you, then I know you don't listen.
Dangerous game that.
I found myself a couple of nights ago with like 2-3 hours before bed where I didn't have to do work and I didn't have to do admin. So I was like, I really want to sink my teeth into a really juicy documentary. So I requested on Twitter what a kind of recent good one was. And everyone was talking about Nick Broomfield's documentary, Can I Be Me, which is about Whitney Houston, which is on iPlayer currently. And it's a really, really powerful, really, really good documentary.
Great.
It's Nick Broomfield's one of my favourite documentary makers. He's done 2 really powerful documentaries on Eileen Wuornos.
Have I not heard of him? I'm obsessed with Eileen
Wuornos.
He's
also like, this is by the by.
Charlize Theron's best work.
His first one is good. His second one is brilliant. And he forms a relationship with her.
I think I might have watched that. That's 100% ringing a bell.
They're really, really good. I think he's the best documentary maker of our time. Also, by the by, he's also one of my desert island crushes.
Let's get him on the high low.
He's so sexy. But he's very, very good. He also did a very good one about Biggie Smalls and Tupac and the death of Biggie Smalls, if you're interested.
Yes, great.
Yeah, it's really good. Very low budget, very good. So I was really excited to see that he is tackling this, the life of Whitney Houston, obviously a really sad story. And it's just beautifully, beautifully done. It kind of tells 3 different strands. It tells the story of a very young girl who was very anxious and very insecure and very eager to please, and about how she was kind of moulded and her energy was kind of sucked up by people around her, very pushy stage parents, a record label who wanted her to be white friendly, make her sound less the way he described it. Her manager was less funkadelic, less James Brown, less black, less R&B. How she could sort of whitewash her music and image so that it was more digestible for a white audience, and how that really messed
her.
With her, yeah. And like, there's this heartbreaking moment that you see. She was so young when she had all those big hits, like her debut album. I can't remember the exact stats, but it had more immediate consecutive number ones of that album, I think, than the Beatles. It was like astonishing kind of baptism of fire. And there's this moment where she's at the Soul Train Music Awards, which I think is for Black Music in America. Her face came up when her album was nominated and everyone booed. And then a friend of hers said it was moments like that, small moments like that, that she held in her heart that led to the moment of her death. And it's just really sad. And it's about her, obviously, relationship with Bobby Brown. And they have this, like, very strange connection, how he led to her self-sabotage. And then there's this extraordinary story of her best friend, who is a woman called Robin. They'd known each other since school. Robin was gay, and there was always kind of murky territory of whether they were lovers or not. A lot of people close to them said they were. And Robin was kind of like her keeper, like her kind of angel throughout the whole thing. And she was her manager, and she was the person who always made sure that she was okay. And it's about how Robin ultimately got pushed out of Whitney's world because of her relationship with Bobby Brown. So it's just...
To her detriment.
Yeah, it shows... It's a beautiful, very sad story, and it shows the real essence of a woman who I think was constantly trying to, well, the title says it, be herself, be me, can she be me? So I recommend everyone watch that.
Great.
Can I ask my storage thing?
Yeah.
I'm having an absolute nightmare with my iPhone storage at the moment. I only have 800 photos on my phone. I only have Twitter or Instagram. I can't ever have both. I can't have eBay, let alone Uber. Forget it. Had to delete the old hormone tracker app. And every time I put my phone on, it says, I've bought new storage, I'm paying £7 a month. It still says I've got no storage.
This is a question for the listeners, isn't it?
So if anyone has any advice or they have been through a similar trauma, please get in touch.
You should just go to Apple. Just make a Genius Bar appointment.
I could.
I can't be bothered. Because if you care enough, you'll go.
I could, but I could also just get our listeners to solve it for me.
Listeners, if you have any queries, the thing is they'll tweet and then you won't read the tweets.
I will read the tweets this week.
Maybe tweet at Dolly Alderton and make sure at Pinsykes is nowhere near the storage tweet.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than 1 billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Support for the Hi-Lo comes from NARS. In this, the first week of September, there is a coolness in the air, the rain is softly falling on cobbles, leaves in the trees are rustling, the bonfires are a-brewing. Yes, it's the beginning of my favourite season, autumn. And it's time to pack away those threadbare summer dresses and pull out the polo necks. It also might be time to seasonally change your makeup bag. So that means out with the golds and shimmers and bronzes and in with the more autumnal cool shades and tones. For example, you might want to ditch the vivacious coral and red lipsticks in favour of something more mysterious. The Audacious Lips collection are high pigment lipsticks in colours such as Ire, which is a rich chocolate, or Kirit, which is a deep berry purple. The Power Matte pigments also offer autumnal shades, such as Under My Thumb, which is burgundy, and Save the Queen in dusty mauve. NARS is offering Hi-Lo listeners two deluxe travel-sized freebies when they make a purchase online at narscosmetics.co.uk. Simply type in the code HILO, H-I-L-O-W, at the checkout, and you'll receive a mini Audacious mascara and mini velvet matte lip pencil in Dolce Vita, one of their best-selling pinky nude shades.
Thank you very much to NARS. It's now time for the top line, read by Dolly Hannah Alderton.
Let's hit us with some tunes, DJ CJ.
I am forever searching high and low, but why does everybody tell me no?
The most powerful Atlantic Ocean hurricane in recorded history has made landfall in the Caribbean islands. The island of Barbuda was the first to be hit by Hurricane Irma with winds of 185 miles per hour early on Wednesday. Diane Abbott was the victim of almost half the abuse directed at women MPs on Twitter during the 2017 election campaign, according to Amnesty International Research. She received 10 times more abuse than any other individual MP in the 6 weeks before the June the 8th vote. The report found that black and Asian female MPs were sent 35% more abusive messages than white MPs. Actress Meghan Markle is on the cover of the new issue of Vanity Fair and, in the accompanying interview, talks about her relationship with Prince Harry for the first time ever.
Woo!
We're two people who are really happy and in love, she said. Personally, I love a great love story. Don't we all, Meghan Markle? Despite the title of his seminal power ballad about rain, it has been revealed that purple was not Prince's favourite colour. It was, in fact, orange. His sister, Tyke Nelson, revealed this while talking to the Evening Standard about an upcoming exhibition of Prince artefacts set to open in London. Sir Martin Nery, joint head of the inquiry into foster care provision, has warned about misleading claims regarding a five-year-old white Christian girl being adopted by Muslim foster parents and that it could deter people from ethnic minorities from offering their services. He said that claims such as she could not eat bacon and was forced to remove her crucifix were unfounded and not based in fact. The girl in question has now been placed back in the care of her grandmother. A man has died at Burning Man Festival after running through security cordons and into a fire. 41-year-old Aaron Joel Mitchell broke through a two-layer security perimeter during the man burn ceremony, in which a giant wooden effigy was set on fire late on Saturday night. We don't know if it was intentional on his part or if it was just kind of induced by drugs. We're not sure of that yet, the sheriff said. The leader of the opposition in New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern, has said her party will decriminalise abortion if it wins this month's general election. In a 90-minute televised leaders' debate on Monday night, she stated unequivocally that abortion shouldn't be in the Crimes Act. Mm. Her stance was met with a round of applause and cheering from a 400-strong studio audience. Under New Zealand law, abortion is currently a crime and legal only in cases of incest, mental subnormality or fetal abnormality, or where the physical or mental health of the mother would be seriously impacted by having a child. A woman who threw a poo out of her Tinder date's toilet window because it would not flush had to be rescued after she got stuck trying to retrieve it. The amateur gymnast was on a first date with Bristol student Liam Smith when she panicked and threw the feces out of the window. It did not land in the garden, but became wedged between two non-opening windows. After climbing in headfirst after it, she became wedged, and her date had to call the fire service for help. Prince William and Kate Middleton have announced they're expecting their third baby. The prince has said it's good news, although has also stated they've had an anxious start to the pregnancy. We need Catherine to get over this first bit and then we can start celebrating, he said. The Duchess has had to pull out of a number of engagements due to severe morning sickness. Long-standing vegetarian Jeremy Corbyn is considering turning vegan. The Labour leader became vegetarian after working on a pig farm at age 20 and now grows a lot of his own food in his allotment. He says he's now going through the process of changing his diet because dishes that do not include eggs or milk have improved. And that was the top line.
I am forever searching high and low. But why does everybody tell me?
That's every woman's nightmare, isn't it?
There are so many of those poo tales that you hear about it.
Yeah, but it's not like it would be bad enough if she got caught chucking the poo out the window. But the fact that she got stuck trying to rescue her poo, the poo became wedged and then so doth she.
What's so strange about the story, the sort of 11th hour narrative twist, is that the BBC picked up the story because of a crowdfund, like a fundraiser page pertaining to the story. That happened on campus.
What were they raising money for?
I don't know.
To get her over her embarrassment?
I don't know.
To send her to Mauritius to get over it.
So she can transfer to another university.
I'd give her a fiver for that.
I would as well.
Do you know what? I do feel, I'm not surprised at all that Prince William and Kate are having a third baby because they are so... You can so imagine them having three children. You could sort of...
I think they'll have a really big family.
I think they'll just have three.
I don't have four.
No, because they are literally governed by, like, royal predictions. Like, you know how they're already saying that it's going to be called Alice or, I can't remember, something else. And it will be, like, one of those names. Like, they are so by the book. Mm. But, my God, I feel for her with her severe morning sickness. I think it's called, like, hypodermis gravidarium or something.
Yeah,
like
that. Yeah.
She's sick 20 times a day. I mean, it's completely... Thank God that she's got the money and the resources to just rest. Mm. All I will say is I do not need another press release about her extreme morning sickness.
I received three this morning.
If you are considering writing a story about Kate Middleton's extreme morning sickness, why in God's name would I be writing a story about Kate Middleton's extreme morning sickness? And what could I say beyond Kate Middleton has extreme morning sickness?
It's very compelling.
The world we live in. I can't believe that about New Zealand as well. I did not realise
they
were so
backward. I had no idea, yeah.
I mean, so many places, aren't there, all over the world. Good for Prince, though. Orange is a strong colour. It is the new black. On to Oxford University, where the Vice-Chancellor, Louise Richardson, has caused controversy this week while speaking at the Times Higher Education World Academic Summit. She said that it is not her job to stop homophobia. I've had many conversations with students who say they don't feel comfortable because their professor has expressed views against homosexuality. They don't feel comfortable being in class with someone with those views. And I say, I'm sorry, but my job isn't to make you feel comfortable. Education is not about being comfortable. I'm interested in making you uncomfortable. If you don't like his views, you challenge them, engage with them, and figure how a smart person can have views like that. Work out how you can persuade him to change his mind. It is difficult, but it is absolutely what we have to do. Dolly, I'm so keen to hear your thoughts on Louise Richardson's comments.
It's so funny that this should come up now, because last night I was listening to a really powerful episode of Guys We Fucked, which is a podcast that Pandora and I both really like. It's the latest episode, and it's about this very topic. It's about the ethics of censorship and the power and democratic right of freedom of speech. And it's an episode featuring an interview with an expert in this field called Professor Nadine Strossen, who's the former ACLU president. And it all comes off the back of this one incident that happened this week with one of the co-hosts, Corinne Fisher, who's a comedian. She tells a story in the intro of how she pulled out of a comedy festival because the women's magazine that sponsored the festival said she wasn't allowed to make any jokes that were about body negativity. So both you and I have interviewed the hosts of the show, Christina and Corinne, and we know that one of their founding philosophies is that they're very, very anti-mollycoddling. They believe we've entered into a kind of safe space age where people infantilize themselves by believing that they are not equipped or that they don't have the strength to hear opinions that differ to them or offend them. And just like the Vice-Chancellor in question, they believe this hinders our kind of collective education and it distorts reality. I'm really grateful for the podcast and particularly this episode for opening my eyes more to this discussion, because I think before I started thinking about the democratic power of freedom of speech, I would have been someone who immediately disagreed with this woman and thought, no, it is your responsibility to shield young people away from views of prejudice. But something Nadine Strossen said on the episode last night really stuck with me. She said, education is the antithesis of comfort. And she was like, since when is being comfortable all the time the most important thing above all else? She then also goes on to talk about when freedom of speech is different to bullying or hate, which is obviously a completely different thing. But the reality is, racism, sexism, homophobia, it still exists. Look what happened in Charlottesville, you know, just a few weeks ago. And I do think giving people of authority a platform to express those views is, of course, wrong, which is where I disagree with the Vice Chancellor. And also using those people to draw in readers or viewers in a magazine or a paper like a Katie Hopkins or whatever, to sell ad space or to gain viewers. Again, fundamentally, I think that's irresponsible and wrong. But I do think we're in very dangerous territory when we don't allow anyone to express any thought because it makes us upset or uncomfortable.
That's so interesting. I'll definitely check that episode out. That's such a good line. Education is the antithesis of comfort. I think that's why I make you feel really uncomfortable, Dolly, because I'm educating you. So this obviously isn't the first time that there's been controversy over safe spaces in universities, and it certainly won't be the last. For instance, earlier this year, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee was criticised in January for letting the alt-right political commentator, putting it politely, Milo Yiannopoulos, onto the stage where he harassed a trans student named Adelaide Kramer. And in fact, this has happened at numerous universities with Milo Yiannopoulos. That's an extreme example of a safe space being eroded or invaded. Louise Richardson's been fairly condemned for these comments, but I think safe spaces is a really interesting thing for someone like her to talk about. And I, like you, am really interested in the concept of safe spaces. Incidentally, I fucking hate that phrase. I think at some point someone's going to do some millennial parody show at Edinburgh Fringe called Safe Spaces and Avocados, because it is such a... it's too laden now with kind of connotations.
Yeah.
But I was disappointed at Louise Richardson's missed opportunity, because she sort of bypassed that responsibility and instead she went for that quite tired narrative of the snowflake, which is obviously right in the millennial jugular. Instead of arguing that she cannot shield her students from homophobia across the world, which in essence is completely true, no one can shield you from that, she, you know, said that if gay students had experienced homophobia from their professors, then it was their problem to navigate, and that essentially it was up to them to change their professors' minds. And I disagree with that. Yeah. I think, Louise, that's your problem to hire and fire accordingly. You can't have any bigots there. It's Oxford, for God's sake. They're, you know, they're meant to be the best. So there's protection, which I don't agree with. It's not her role to protect students, but then there's pastoral care, and I think that actually that comes into the latter of pastoral care.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's entirely unacceptable to have people in positions of authority or influence holding those views and expressing them publicly, and that is the university's job to control that. But I'm not sure where I stand on no platforming on campus. It's something I think about a lot, and I'm still not sure where I'm at with it. Something Nadine Strossen brings up in the discussion is that free speech is the most effective and authentic way of ensuring a fair and just future, which I think is really interesting and I hadn't really thought about before. And she argues that by allowing the kind of hate-fuelled, irrational, moronic, unfounded views of certain individuals to be given a space to be aired without kind of fanfare, that is the quickest way to expose them for what they are, rather than censoring them, which kind of allows them to be victimised, and also in a way sort of creates a mythical sensationalist whirlwind around them.
Yeah, good point.
I also want to reference here, and don't worry, this will be the first and probably last time I ever reference Rod Little.
I was not expecting that. I was expecting like Jill Soloway or something.
No, on this podcast. I really do not align
it's
myself
okay,
with Rod
it,
Little. But he wrote this piece for the Sunday Times a while back about free speech on campus and how astonished he was that the real radical thinkers of his time, such as Germaine Greer or even Julie Bindle or Mary Beard, indeed, had not been allowed to speak at universities. So we'll put the link to the Sunday Times piece, but I'd just like to quote from it. He said, "The student activists do not wish to hear anything at all that conflicts with their views, or even hear anything that does not conflict with their views, but allows for the fact that there might be conflicting views. They wish to remain in a state of pristine delusion, insulated from any possible attempt at contradiction. They will not be argued with." And then he went on to interview Mary Beard, and she said, "Something in the world has gone barking mad. They've gone bonkers. It's very, very weird. The world has gone upside down. It's meant to be the young who are risk takers and the elderly more worried about controversy." And I must say, as I said, I'm still really trying to work out where I stand on it, but increasingly I do see both sides as very valid.
I read the piece about Louise Richardson when I had just finished watching, sorry, here it comes again, Good Morning Britain.
My God.
Where the LGBTQ plus editor of BuzzFeed got into a row with Piers Morgan because they had let a man come onto the show who claims to be able to cure homosexuality. Mm. And the BuzzFeed editor said, "You shouldn't be giving these people an airspace." And Piers Morgan said, and I have to say I really agreed, "Yes, but in having these people on to this platform, which lots of people watch, we have the opportunity to debunk what they are saying, to expose the fallacy of their bigotry." Anyway, they got into an argument where the BuzzFeed, I love live television, where the BuzzFeed editor said, "The thing is, Piers, you used to be a journalist and now you're just a narcissist." And you saw him and Susanna just bawled. And Piers Morgan said in riposte, which I have to say I do get, I'm paraphrasing, I can't remember exactly what he said. He said something like, "The problem with you new liberals is that you cannot hear the opposing side of the coin." And I have to say, I really agree with that particular sentiment, that a lot of the time now, being really liberal or left-thinking, etc., means that you do not have time, not just time, but like you cannot allow the knowledge that there are views that you disagree with. And that does worry me. And it is something I see encouragingly.
And it's counterproductive.
It's really counterproductive. You can't progress without it. And so, I think that we shouldn't be isolated in a vacuum of our own views, and universities more than anywhere should not be a vacuum, and they should challenge. Not only because the real world is full of challenges. You can't just shut down ideologies or conversations that you do not agree with. You can't do it in the real world, so why would you do it at university? And it's why people talk a lot about the social media echo chamber, because we all just follow people with the same opinions as ourselves, and it's dangerous.
Well, that's another tip actually I picked up off Guys We Fucked. See, you're the spokesperson for Good Morning Britain. I'm the spokesperson for Guys We Fucked this episode.
Who sounds cooler out of that?
But there's, in the first episode that they did with John Ronson, they've done two really good John Ronson interviews. He says we should all be following people who don't share the same opinions as us.
Yeah, I agree with him.
Because otherwise, we're sort of being fantasists in the interests of comfort or self-protection or supposed safety. And to get a full picture of the injustices of this world and to fight them effectively and accordingly, we have to expose ourselves to uncomfortable truths.
That said, it is madness that it's even considered okay for a professor to verbalise any homophobic views to his or her students. And I don't mean hold those views, because no one can be criticised about views they hold. It's expressing them. You know, if you don't verbalise them, no one's ever going to know them. But if they're verbalised, that's something quite different. I think Louise Richardson trying to defend the teachers who may do that is an indefensible defence.
Yeah, and it's I think it's rather dangerous for her to have that positioning on it, particularly when in education, even higher education, these people are meant to be informing you of fundamental truths, and that should be helping form your worldview.
I think it's a real shame that Louise Richardson's comments have become mired in controversy because of that one ill-advised point she made, because she did make some really valid comments. And I wish she hadn't said that one bloody thing, because now the rest of it gets really overlooked. But at its nub, I think there's something really interesting, this paternalistic idea that we should be shielded from the more odious things in life. And I completely understand how she made LGBTQ plus students feel with these comments. She's essentially disregarding their safety in an institution that they've probably worked their nuts off to get
into. Yes,
exactly. But I do think we have to be careful about shutting down opposing views, as you say. It comes back to the issue of no platforming and where you draw the line. So Milo Yiannopoulos and his gay faggot tour, clearly not worth a platform.
Yeah.
But for instance, there have been many instances where safe spaces have, in my opinion, elected to create an unrealistic university ecosystem. For example, in February, the University of Strathclyde Student Association banned a pro-life student group from organising on campus, using their facilities or expressing their opinions. Now, that's just unrealistic. That's not what the world looks like. There are pro-life groups everywhere. It's not illegal. America's Senate is full of pro-lifers. You know, do I wish it wasn't? Yes, but should they be banned from universities because of this? No, university's the perfect time to learn that the world is a nasty place. But all that said, that doesn't mean you should ever feel unsafe in your classroom. And I do think that's where Louise Richardson was wrong.
Yeah, you should feel uncomfortable and challenged, I think, is fine. But unsafe, you should never feel.
The High-Low is sponsored by Sainsbury's Home. Sainsbury's Home prides itself on delivering great quality, design-led products at very nice prices, aka high-quality design at high street prices. Sainsbury's Home has a dedicated in-house design team of 14, and 80% of Sainsbury's Home product is designed by the in-house creative team. For autumn, the Sainsbury's Home team have taken inspiration from the great British countryside, from the interiors of inner city boutique hotels and cocktail lounges. Authentic design is at the heart of how the 14 in-house designers create their exclusive prints and palettes, and this season each trend has a signature fragrance blended exclusively for Sainsbury's Home to evoke all the warmth and comfort and spice of winter. So the ranges available this September are Nordic Skies, inspired by the Nordic scenery and lifestyle. This muted tone theme exudes contemporary style, embossed textures and soft accenting of colours in materials such as wood, mercury, glass and grey faux fur. Renaissance Boutique indulge in the glamour and grandeur of the 1920s with stylish home accessories, geometric patterns and opulent skilled craftsmanship. Then you have Woodland Walk, which captures the tones and textures of an autumnal country walk, creating cosy living space with warm aubergine and mulberry colours used across chunky knits and pattern textiles. The Sainsbury's in-house design team have created a unique narrative of a woodland scene with hair figures in rich brass metallic finish and an exclusive fragrance of applewood and clove. Enjoy all of those. There is something for everyone. Thank you very much to Sainsbury's Home.
L'Oreal has sacked its first transgender model, Munro Bergdorf, just 5 days after announcing that she was their new face of one of its campaigns. The sacking happened as a result of the model posting a statement on Facebook in which she reacted to the recent white supremacist rally in Charlottesville. "Honestly, I don't have the energy to talk about racial violence of white people anymore. Yes, all white people," she wrote in a post on her Facebook page, which has since been deleted following a number of complaints. "Because most of y'all don't even realise or refuse to acknowledge that your existence, privilege and success as a race is built on the backs, blood and death of people of colour. Your entire existence is drenched in racism, from microaggressions to terrorism. You guys built the blueprint for the shit. Come see me when you realise that racism isn't learnt, it's inherited, consciously or unconsciously passed down through privilege. Once white people begin to admit that their race is the most violent and oppressive force of nature on earth, then we can talk." The decision to drop Munro has been met with divisive opinions, many criticising L'Oreal for seemingly championing diversity and then not allowing her to use the platform to speak about her lived experiences of discrimination. Pandora, what do you think about this story?
Well, this is a great topic to have alongside our earlier discussion because it really feeds into the idea of free speech, doesn't it? And where those limitations are. When is it free speech and when is it slander and who decides what is what? Essentially, what Munro is saying is exactly what we have talked about time and time again on the High-Low, and as we often refer to Rennie Edo Lodge's book, Why I No Longer Talk to White People About Race. Some of you may remember that we had Rennie on as an author special earlier in the summer. It's what her whole book focuses on, and it's obviously particularly potent after Charlottesville. In short, racism is structural and endemic to white privilege. Institutional racism shores up white privilege. It doesn't mean you or I are necessarily individually racist, but white power has long existed on the absence of power elsewhere. But that being said, I love that she didn't have a publicist because nowadays everyone has a sodding publicist.
Yeah, I have to say, I really don't have an issue with how she expressed it, particularly as I think it's really been taken out of context in a lot of reports as a kind of just out of the blue rant apropos of nothing. You know, it was on her Facebook page. Pandora and I aren't sure whether it was private or public Facebook page. I do think that that's slightly different. It was in response to a news event and it was something that was very upsetting and very enraging. And it didn't target individuals. It was off the back of her experience. It was emotionally charged and angry. But, you know, wouldn't you be emotionally charged and angry if your eyes were open to structural racism as they are with her, paired with, I'm sure, personal discrimination that she's experienced throughout her life as a black woman and as a trans woman, I think she's allowed to be angry in her expression of her reaction. A double standard that people have been slightly perturbed by is the fact that Munro called out systemic racism off the back of an international news incident, wrote about it and was dropped by L'Oreal, but Cheryl Cole physically assaulted a black woman in 2003 and is still the kind of long-standing face of L'Oreal. Cheryl has got wind of this point being made and she has said that she's disappointed to be involved in the row.
Boringly, Cheryl didn't actually tweet Munro because she does have a publicist, so therefore, rather than being fucking fuming, which she would have been if she didn't, she's merely disappointed. Yeah, sure. I love that after she was fired, she just thought, well, that's fucking it. I'm going to make a comment about Cheryl as well. They're all coming down with me. But I get it. She was furious. And again, probably not the most diplomatic response, but I can see why she made that point about Cheryl, because as you say, a lot of people have made that point. Mm. Are you surprised that L'Oreal fired her?
No. I think white people still don't understand that black people can't be racist towards mm-hmm. us. I didn't quite understand that, admittedly, myself, until I read Rennie's book. And it's such a fundamental thing to have to get your head around before we can move forward with the conversations around racism and black oppression. I still think that structurally, systemically, culturally, either unconsciously or consciously, black people are stereotyped as being angry and dangerous. And I still think that means, again, maybe not individually, but societally, we don't listen to what they have to say and we write them off or we drop them from campaigns because we think of them as being irrational and uncontained and uncontrolled. The irony is she was meant to be this kind of bastion of diversity, but it's as if we sort of only wanted a tiny bit of digestible diversity. We wanted it to be sort of silent diversity that looks good and that makes everything seem like a sort of happy, sexy Benetton advert, but not diversity that tells uncomfortable truths that we don't like confronting.
I think that's a really good point that you make. And also, when L'Oreal hired her, they will have known that this is what she's like. This will not have been her first rodeo. As she says herself, she's an activist. She's probably spoken like this a lot. But I'm not surprised L'Oreal fired her, I'm afraid. And I reckon it went something like, you're L'Oreal, you are no doubt governed by a lot of rich white men who would have been pretty narked by this point. You're L'Oreal, who sells them to lots and lots of white faces. You're L'Oreal, who needs to keep the waters calm because you're a business, you're a corporation. And it's sad because the more I've read about her, the more I think she'd be such a worthy ambassador. She speaks so much truth, and you know, clearly L'Oreal agreed as they hired her in the first place. In an interview with The Guardian, she shared that her mum, who is white, was annoyed with her comments. That was an awful conversation, she says. I'm half white. My mum thought I was lumping her in with everyone, but this isn't about individuals. To understand my point, you have to take yourself out of the conversation. It's not about you, and truly think about society, structurally, economically, as a whole. That's exactly what, as a brand ambassador, she should have posted in the first place.
But then it's that old argument again, isn't it, of whether it's her job to educate us. You know, does she have to streamline her anger so all the subtleties and nuances of racism are explained to white people to make sure they don't get upset and offended? I think she's allowed to express herself how she wants, especially if what I read is true, that it was on her Facebook page, probably to her friends, and probably in a sphere where her ambassador hat wasn't on.
Someone else will hire her and we'll be hearing a lot more from her, I'm sure.
And they'll be lucky to hire her, because actually what L'Oreal had an opportunity there to show, instead of box-ticking diversity, to show that they really embrace diversity and the realities of the world we live in and the realities of the oppression that these people face. What the most amazing celebratory thing they could have done would have been to not drop her. But that's an opportunity missed for them. It's time for Ask the Hilo. Thank you so much for all your questions. As ever, you can always email us with feedback, thoughts, questions for this section, dilemmas on thehiloshow@gmail.com. Hi, Pandora and Dolly. My name is Sid. I'm a comedian in LA and I need your sage advice. First, thank you for getting me through those long drives to auditions in Santa Monica. When one doesn't go well, and I know I have your podcast to listen to on the drive back, I feel like it wasn't such a waste. Okay, here's my problem. I've chosen an insane career path and it's starting to make me miserable. I perform weekly at big theatre in LA and have a few things going on career-wise right now, but my anxiety is at an all-time high and I constantly think about quitting and moving to Paris. I'm a crazy romantic and I keep thinking, oh yeah, you'll be happy in Paris writing and working at a restaurant. I don't even speak French. I have a nice boyfriend here that I live with and I'm giving the poor guy a heart attack with how much I talk about it. Do you two ever romanticise a new life even when you know it wouldn't be as great as you imagine? How do you ground yourself and convince yourself it's all going to be all right? I've never even been to France. Please tell me it's not that great. Or tell me it's great and I should go. Okay, well, I love you both and you're my heroes. Hope you have the best day.
Sid, I love how much you're romanticising what is an incredibly unfriendly city where no one will speak English to you. I love Paris, but I also actually hate it a bit when I have to go for work because it is hella inhospitable. And I think you might get a nasty shock if you did move there from LA. But I love that, you know, you've got the romance. You've got the dreams. Mm. Dolly, she sounds a bit like you.
I'm just obsessed with this woman. I got this email and I sent it to Pandora. I was like, I really think that in another life I'd be living in LA just chewing the fat with Sid over a green juice.
I just love, I've never even been to France. I know, she's tell me it's so not great.
Funny.
Sid, I think you've got to go.
I think that my overarching feeling reading your email is that you're a very funny, very talented, very charming person.
We can't watch you.
I know how difficult it is being a comedian. It's even tougher being a female comedian. I fucking dated a comedian. I have been to those shows. I've sat in those green rooms. It's difficult. I know how difficult it is. I think it's natural that with something that's so hard and also so sexist and so poorly paid and so lonely, as you said, my ex-boyfriend, most of his life was spent on the M25 kind of eating sandwiches in the car at 1 a.m. coming down from Fife or whatever. It is a really difficult, lonely job. I think you really have to love it to do it. And perhaps the anxiety that you're feeling might be that you're having a bit of a wobble with it or that it's not suiting your life. And it's totally fine to take a pause from it for a while. As Pandora said, Paris is quite, it's a very expensive and...
Yeah, back to Paris. You might be projecting here.
And fairly difficult city to get by, and I wouldn't go straight to Paris with you, especially when you don't speak French.
I think you've got to go here on holiday, though. I love that you're so obsessed
with your boyfriend. But I think the other thing as well is that if you, and I've definitely fallen foul of this, if you have anxieties about your job and you're feeling a kind of ennui at home and you're feeling kind of bored of things, that inner landscape, you carry it everywhere. It doesn't matter whether you're in Paris.
It's not about the external landscape.
It doesn't matter where you are. If you're not happy with who you are or how you feel inside, no city is going to change that. So I would try and fix that. And my inkling would be that it's probably your job that's giving you anxiety. So it might be a time to take a break from it, or it might be a time to re-strategize. But you've got two fans here in London, so maybe you should come here and crash in Pandora's spare room.
You heard the good lady. Except my spare room's my home office, so let's talk, Sid, before that happens. Thank you so much for writing to us, Sid. Thank you to everyone who emailed The High Low. If you'd like to get in touch, it's thehighlowshow@gmail.com. Sorry if we have not personally replied to your email. The inbox is a battleground and we only sometimes have our armour. You can also tweet us at The High Low Show. Please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on iTunes.
It will be, we'll be so grateful if you do that.
It helps boost us and it also helps other people to find us. Thank you so much to Acast for letting us use your studio this week. You going to say bye-bye, Dolly?
Dolly out!
Dear God. Bye!
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.